We still have another treat. And let me tell you, this guy is one of the neatest men that you'll ever meet. You're going to love him. He's absolutely wonderful. Married, so the rest of us women can't chase him. But he's wonderful, and he came in with the idea of, I don't know, God, but I'm willing to find out what this is all about. And we touched his heart to the point of knowing that he knows, and that's our George Thorne.
Well, I have to tell you a little God story first. We tell God stories in our spiritual development classes, but I didn't get to go to mine last night because I was in a little car wreck and got rear-ended and stuff. But I just found out this afternoon that the man who hit me paid his insurance on Monday, and I was in the wreck on Tuesday, so it's all taken care of. So not too shabby. So first of all, I have something I want to share to you, a little story. It's this Methodist minister, and every Sunday after church, he used to like to go to the dog racetrack, like to look at the ponies. And one Sunday he went and looks down on the track, and there, lo and behold, there's the Catholic priest, and he's walking up to the horses, and he walks up to one of the horses, and all of a sudden he gives the horse his blessing. And wouldn't you know it, the race starts, horse takes off, wins the race. Guy looks and goes, gee. Next race, same thing. There goes the priest. Gives the horse his blessing, comes in first place. Well, Methodist minister's no fool, so he's third race, he's gonna put down $2 and bet on his horse. Same thing, there goes the Catholic priest, gives the horse his blessing, wins. You know, the Methodist minister really thinks he's found the ticket to heaven here. So he doubles his bet. Same thing, wins. Keeps doubling it, wins. Every time the Catholic priest goes to the horse, gives his blessing, horse wins. Final race, Catholic priest does the same thing. Methodist minister, feeling really quite heavenly at the moment, runs to the ATM machine, gathers all of his savings, puts it on the horse, though he noticed when he looked at this horse, the horse looked kind of old and tired. But by this time, he had faith. He believed in the Catholic priest. Race begins. All the horses take off. The priest's horse is nowhere in sight. Race ends. The horse is probably 20 furlongs behind, comes in dead last. Methodist minister goes running down onto the track, demands the priest, what happened? Every race, you bless the horse, it comes in first, I win. This time you bless the horse and it comes in dead last. I lost all my money, what happened? Catholic priest looks up at him slyly and goes, you know, that's the trouble with you Protestants, you can't tell the difference between a blessing and last rites. That has absolutely nothing to do with what I'm going to talk about tonight. But I just, sometimes we can get a little serious, so I thought, you know, a little spiritual humor. Millie asked me to talk some time ago, and when Millie asks you to talk, sometimes those of us who have done a whole lot get a little nervous, and they go, oh, gee, what are we going to talk about, and start, you know, pull our teeth and not know what we're going to say. But this time was different. As soon as she asked me, I knew exactly what I wanted to talk about. Something that's a lot of it has to do with this church, that's rapidly becoming my favorite word in the whole world, and that word is inspiration. And the word inspiration, for once I looked it up, usually I don't bother with the facts, I kind of make them up as I go along, but this word is very important, so I thought I would look it up, and it has two meanings. One is drawing in of inhalation, drawing the air into the lungs and inhalation, and the other is divine influence directly and immediately exerted upon the mind or soul. So to me, what it makes sense to me is to bring those two meanings together and inspiration to me is breathing in of spirit, the God of the soul. And when Millie asks you to talk, I think she's got a hidden agenda too, because it makes us think. We have to figure out what it is we believe and what we think in. And if inspiration is breathing in of spirit, then for the first time, I had to ask myself, what does it mean to have a broken spirit? And I began to think that it means exactly that, that as human beings, we've broken off our relationship in some way with the divine. Many people, I believe, have come to this church, and I include myself in this, have had a broken spirit. Oftentimes we don't know it. We're looking to get healed, and I think that's happened to us, and I know it's happening to me. And I think there's a lot of us in this country that have a broken spirit, and it's a big problem. And I'd like to share with you a few facts to tell you what I mean. The average American spends 153 hours watching television every month. It's nearly 40 hours a week. Every man, woman, and child, 14 and over, drinks an average of 2.37 gallons of alcohol each year. I think when I quit drinking, that number went down. People taking antidepressants has doubled in the United States in the last 10 years. So much cocaine flows in our society that the U.S. Treasury Department estimates that traces can be found in all paper money in circulation in the United States. And for those of you who don't know, they use money to roll it up and snort the cocaine. 2.3 million people are behind bars in the United States. We lead the world in both the number and percentage of our citizens in jail, leaving even far more populous China just in second. The United States Army just commissioned a $50 million study to uncover reasons why suicide among American soldiers is skyrocketing faster than any time in U.S. history. This is the one that just really, 3,184 children and teens are killed by guns each year in America. The number nearly equals the total number of U.S. combat deaths in Iraq since the war started, more than five times the number in Afghanistan. More preschoolers are killed by firearms each year than law enforcement officers. Since 1979, guns have ended the lives of 107,603 children and teens in America. 700,000 homeless people sleep in our streets each night in America. 2 million a year. 40% of all homeless men have served in the United States military. 40%. Do we as a society have a problem with the people with having a broken spirit? I think so. And this is only the tip of the iceberg. But that's not what I really want to focus on tonight. I give you these facts to draw the contrast between inspiration and a broken spirit, because I want to focus on inspiration and what it means and how we can use it to help all of us. And tonight I want to talk to you about inspiration a little bit different way. If we are all part of God, as Millie says, bubbles of God, and we all know what God does and can do, what can we accomplish being parts of God? And this is for you, young lady. If God's Spirit created the sun, the moon, the stars, the oceans, mountains, and streams, and all of us, and we are all part of God, what can you create? Are you capable of just about anything? What are you inspired to do? If you breathe in spirit, what can you bring into your life? If you look at spirit for inspiration. Inspiration. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, God created earth in 6 days and rested, and created Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Michelangelo Bonaparte, my hero in my entire life, painted 9 scenes from the book of Genesis on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel from 1508 to 1512. It's spectacular. It's unbelievable. He spent 4 years on his back. Working from scaffolding, he built himself. At best, his head tilted to the sky, and it caused him to go practically blind. The Sistine ceiling is in the Vatican in Rome. It's where the conclave of cardinals meet to elect a pope. It is a sacred place for the entirety of Catholic religion, if not the world. Have you ever painted a room? Thought about painting a room? Think about painting a room half a football field long on a ceiling 7 stories high for 4 years. And basically you lay out the biblical story of creation in unbelievable magical detail. so his work would last, Michelangelo did it in fresco, meaning he applied wet plaster before it started to dry, and he applied paint to the plaster and came back later with finer brushes to draw on the details. The theme of the ceiling is humanity's need for salvation is offered by God through Jesus. It is a visual metaphor for mankind's need for a covenant with God. And ironically, as magnificent as it is, he resented the work that was assigned to him by the Pope, and back in those days he did what the Pope said, because he believed it only served the Pope's need for grandeur. It's Michelangelo's crowning achievement painting, although his main work was as a sculptor and not as a painter. But above all, what struck me when I read this so many years ago in the book, The Agony and the Ecstasy, is that his willingness to give 4 years of his life to a single purpose. And my question to you is, would you give 4 years of your life to achieve your own greatness? Look what incredible beauty God and man can create, and we look to God, what inspiration we can achieve. Another of the world's great artists, Rembrandt, was so vividly able to recreate the soft glow of natural candlelight that there is even a term for it, Rembrandt lighting. Do you believe in reincarnation? How else to explain one of the greatest composers of all, Mozart, was composing music when he was 5 and wrote his first symphony when he was 8, one of 600 pieces of music he would write before he died at the age of 35. Have you ever been to or seen pictures of the Grand Canyon? Listen. You can hear Grand Canyon through the music of Ferdy Groffay and the Grand Canyon Suite. The mules clomping down into the canyon, the thunderstorms pounding in the nighttime sky. You can listen to the sounds of nature and feel what it's like to experience sunrise over the canyon. And what if a beautiful day it is over one of God's greatest creations. Inspiration. Are you breathing in the Spirit of God? But what is important doesn't take genius and all the talent in the world to do great things. What are you inspired to do with God as your partner? I read something the other day that has stayed with me. Paul Coelho says, I learned the most important lesson of my life, that the extraordinary is not the birthright of a chosen and privileged few, but of all people, even the humblest. That is my one certainty. We are all the manifestation of the divinity of God. Look what the most humble amongst us can do when we are inspired. In 1995, in Marlboro, Massachusetts, David Heim was seriously injured in an automobile accident that nearly cost him his life. His final prognosis, never to walk again, he was forever committed to life in a wheelchair. When asked in a national interview how he felt about what had happened to him, he said, I have no regrets what has happened to me. I have found my mission in life. In January 1998, David Heim founded the Wheelchair Recycler, Inc. He has helped build and renovate over 500 power wheelchairs worth between $5,000 and $25,000 to people all over the United States and other countries, and thousands of repairs. The Wheelchair Recycler has saved hundreds of people from being bedridden, helping out people quickly, not waiting for insurance companies, often force handicapped people to wait up a year or more for assistance. They keep a stockpile of parts and chairs for people in need. His company hasn't made any money yet his mission in life is complete. Inspiration, right in our own backyard. Look at Matthew Tesler. He's principal of one of the principals in the Chula Vista Elementary School District. In 4 years, he has taken 2 disadvantaged schools in poor neighborhoods and lifted the kids to greatness. First, he led Loma Verde Elementary School off of the U.S. government sanctions list for failing schools with 2 years of improved test scores. Now he's doing it again at Harborside Elementary, the only San Diego County principal to lead 2 schools out of federal sanctions. Harborside School is in San Ysidro, next to a rundown trailer park and garbage dump. The litter and the garbage blows into the schoolyard every day. Harborside's score on the Academic Performance Index was 845 on a scale of 1,000, 160 points than it was 2 years ago. It is the most improved of 700 public schools in San Diego County. Tesler spends 80% of his time in classroom, where he works with students and teachers, focusing on writing as a foundation. Also in Chula Vista, when it comes to inspiration, in 2009, in not the best part of town, a gang of 11, 12, and 13-year-olds largely Mexican-American young boys did something that caught the world's attention. It was absolutely outrageous. They won the 2009 Little League World Series Championship. They didn't know that they couldn't succeed. Nobody told them. One of their pitchers was a huge kid, 6 feet tall, 212 pounds, and he hit home runs about every other time he got up to bat. He never quit, even when down in the championship game by 3 runs. The Harborview Little League champions from Chula Vista are the best among 2.5 million kids in the world that play Little League. Asked one of the why they were still playing, why they wouldn't quit, why they kept winning, he said, "We're not ready to go home yet." I love these kids and everything they stand for. One of the announcers during the games, and I watched every one, proclaimed, "They're not fueled by steroids, but by Cheerios." The father of one of the kids bought the house where Adrian Gonzalez, who's the first baseman for the Padres, and his brother grew up as kids in Chula Vista. The Gonzalez father built a batting cage where the Gonzalez boys learned how to hit and went on to play in the big leagues. The Chula Vista Little League team did the same thing. After they won the championship, the pros from the Padres, the Gonzalez brothers, took the whole team out for a steak dinner because they were champions. Speaking of sports, there's a lot of inspiration going on in the athletic field these days. More and more you watch football and baseball games, you'll see players do this. After they score a touchdown or hit a home run, they'll thump their chest, kiss their lips, and point to the sky, giving all honor to God for what they have done. This year, the University of Southern California played the Ohio State in football in Ohio. There were 106,000 people in attendance. Leading the USC team was a 19-year-old freshman, their quarterback. I don't know about you, but at 19, I could barely find my way up to the doors to the college campus. This kid was playing the biggest game of his life, and they won in front of 106,000 people. They interviewed him after the game and asked him what it was like to win in front of so many people. The very first words out of his mouth were, "I give all honor to God." At more and more football stadiums across the country, especially college, where my son played too, you'll see big tough boys from both sides huddle in the middle of the field after the game. They're tired, muddy, and tough kids, but they'll kneel down and pray together, representing all religions, both sides of the field, thanking God for the game and for their safety on the field. It's an honor and humbling to watch them. Another sports story about perhaps the greatest of all, coaches of all time. He won 10 national championships in 12 years as the head basketball coach for UCLA. His name is John Wooden. He coached from 1947 to 1959. His record, he won 664 games and lost only 162. He's revered by every player that ever played for him, every fan that knows the game. Every coach in America in any sport looks up to him. Many have tried to pattern their lives after him. 10 national championships in 12 years. It's unbelievable. Did he scream and yell at the kids as most coaches do? Did he say, as some do, that winning is the only thing for the sake of the individual? Just the opposite. He never, ever spoke about winning, ever. He never mentioned it. All he ever talked about was preparation. If you prepare well, you can do anything you set your mind to. If you want to know about his winning strategy, listen to what John Wooden has to say. Material possessions, winning scores, and great reputations are meaningless in the eyes of the Lord because he knows what we really are, and that is all that matters. Failure is not fatal, but failure to change might be. There are many things that are essential to arriving at true peace of mind, and one of the most important is faith, which cannot be acquired without prayer. Coach Wooden was asked one time if he could invite 3 people from history to dinner, whom would it be? He quietly answered, "Mother Teresa, Abraham Lincoln, and Jesus." He lives by his 7-point creed given to him by his father Joshua upon his graduation from grammar school, and he instilled it endlessly in the hearts and minds of his players, all of whom adore him, and I mean they adore him, and many who went on to play in the NBA. Here is the 7-point creed. Number 1, be true to yourself. Number 2, make each day your masterpiece. Number 3, help others. Number 4, drink deeply from great books, especially the Bible. Number four, I make friendship a fine art. Number five, built a shelter against a rainy day. Number six, pray for guidance and give thanks for your blessings every day. John Wooden just turned 99 years old. One final note on the greatest achievement of this man among men. In 1947, John Wooden's basketball team won the Indiana Collegiate Conference title. And there, his team was invited to go to a national tournament in Kansas City. Wooden refused to go because the tournament banned African Americans. A member of his Indiana Sycamores team was Clarence Walker, an African American from East Chicago, Indiana. He refused to go to this tournament, which his team would have probably won in 1947, long before it was popular. Inspiration. One final sports story close to home. There's a young man who lives here in Coronado. He's mid-40s. He's a family man. He has two kids. I've met him. I hardly know him. His name's Steve Wampler. He's planning to climb El Capitan, a mountain twice as high as the Empire State Building at Yosemite. He's going to do it on September 10th, 2010. It's kind of a big deal, but you go, you know, a lot of people climb mountains. But I forgot to mention one thing. Steve Wampler has cerebral palsy. He's going to do it by using ropes and pulleys, and he will do 20,000 pull-ups to conquer the face of El Capitan. He will spend six nights sleeping against the face of the granite cliffs. And the money, the donations he raises, will go to his special kids, just like him, who will go to his Camp Wampler. It's an outdoor sports camp. Inspiration is the whole curriculum, no matter what they are teaching. His purpose for Camp Wampler is simple, to change the lives of disabled kids for the better. What can you do if you are inspired? What can you do if you breathe in the Spirit of God? This church has inspired me. The church and the people in it have helped me change my life. It's been my greatest inspiration because through them I have seen God's Spirit. And it's little by little changing the way I think, what I believe, and how I see the world. I came here 3 years ago with a broken spirit, and little by little I'm healing. Sometimes I think I talk too much about what happened to me as a kid and the impact it had on me, but I don't display my own boundaries. But it has helped me to talk about it immensely. And it's wonderful how many people over time have come up to me to share their journeys and their lives with me. I am humbled and so grateful for the people of this church who have helped me. And some of you are in the room tonight. Kathy and Judy, Kathy's a coach and wellness coach and has helped so many people. Ever since I met her, I just love her. And Judy Johnson, who's working on her LCSW. And it's helped me through a lot of tough times. I'm gonna ruin Dave's image here tonight because Dave, contrary to what some might think, is a pretty great guy. And he's been my spiritual friend, and he's always giving me spiritual things to read, and if I don't read them, he makes me have coffee with him and he reads them to me. And he brought me to this church, and for which I'm forever grateful. And there's someone else I want to mention, and that's my dear Millie. And I want to tell you something, Millie, and I want everyone to hear it. I've been to the Sistine Chapel. I've seen the work of one of the greatest artists in the history of the world, how he envisioned God. Millie, you gave me something greater. You have shown me God. Inspiration, breathe in spirit. I am doing that, and the more that I breathe in, the more that my impossible dreams are becoming possible. And my book will finally be printed next month. 3 years ago, I couldn't have done that. As I started my new life, when many are thinking about retiring, I am only just beginning. So I ask you once more, what are you doing by breathing in spirit, God? What are you inspired to do in your life? Remember, I learned the most important lesson of my life, that the extraordinary is not the birthright of a chosen and privileged few, but of all people, even the humblest. That is my one certainty. We are all the manifestation of the divinity of God. Finally, I'll leave you with one great line that I heard the other day. Don't be afraid, be inspired. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. one final note, and for the best part,